Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Stop.
Hello and welcome to the AI Movie Night. If you're expecting the dulcet tones of Joe Simpson, you'll be sadly disappointed, but hopefully you stick with me. I am your new host of this podcast, Rory Greenfield. You might have heard me on this before because I've done ridiculous amount of pods on this. So I've done the Blade Runner and Shawshank and Bourne Trilogy and I don't know, anything I basically was allowed to do. And I'm also co-host of the AI Comic Pod. Joe sadly is unable to do these duties anymore, so I'm going to be your permanent host moving forward. Be slightly different approach to what Joe did, but you know, simply kind of out of respect of what he did before, he'll be on occasion, which I'll really appreciate. And yeah, just, you know, appreciate your feedback and the kind of love and respect that Joe's kind of gained on this pod over the years of doing it. I've got two excellent guests. I've got a hell of an excellent topic this evening, so we're pretty excited to get started on this. First is a guy I've spoken to a couple of times, will be quite regular on this podcast. It's Luke Chandley. How are you doing?
Hello there. Yeah, doing quite well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to getting stuck in. I've been spent, I'm gonna say, I think it was half two when I started watching Fincher recaps this afternoon, and I finished nice. 5 minutes before nine, so
nice.
And it's 12
that's,
past nine now, so
man.
It
that's
is commitment. Yeah, I had yeah, I didn't have much of a tea, just so I could watch telly, so yeah, I'm
just
all
sacrificing your tea for this. That's yeah, that's a big thing, man. That's a big
I know
claim.
It just means I can have a big tea later, but yeah, I've been swatting up today, so I'm really that's the only
big
reason.
See you later on.
We last talked
when we did Baby Driver actually on this podcast, which was really good.
Yeah,
Edgar Wright's a guy that I might come back and revisit and do some of the kind of format that we're going to do on tonight's as well in the future. So also joining me, you may know him from his wonderful Twitter handle, Hefty Horse. It's a guy who's regular on the box and has been on AI Comic Pod. It's Simon Dowling. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. I have also spent my day watching Fincher films. So
Jesus,
I'm,
guys, will you guys get a job like me?
I did.
And just make me feel jealous anymore.
I did eat my food as I was watching a pretty nasty scene in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, so I don't recommend.
Scene,
I don't recommend eating.
I worry you,
not the bad scene, just when they were having a look at a few pictures. But
particular scene in that
no,
film,
it wasn't
which
that
made
scene.
Me
no,
wince.
Yeah.
No, that's not something you want to be tucking into your tea.
That scene.
Especially if it's like a hot dog or something.
Yeah, I don't think Finch is a director where you really fancy eating. You know, anything that might make you feel a little bit queasy on one stage or another. He has a kind of history of showing it as it is kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, for me, doing this podcast is a big honour and a big pleasure, because if anyone knows me from AI Comic Pod or this or from Twitter, I talk films quite a lot. It's kind of been my passion since I was little. And I have a massive deep regret for not getting into to doing film production and various, and I do a little bit of writing here and there and stuff. So yeah, it's just a big passion of mine. And from my perspective, and people that do listen to Comic Pod know, I do talk about cinematography and production and direction. I'm not as far as going on about lenses and lighting and shit, but I like to focus on more than just the acting and the scenes and the action and all that kind of jazz. So yeah, it's a big thing for me. Fincher as a topic choice, to be honest, I couldn't think of anyone better to kick off, really. He hands down is my favorite director by quite a significant margin, and mainly because his count of films that I adore is ridiculous. So if you look at his credits on IMDb, he's got about 84, 88 kind of hits, but mainly, and a lot of that is because he did music videos for years. So he's produced music videos for Michael Jackson and Madonna and all those kind of types until he went off to do films. The films that I love, and there's quite a lot, to be honest, and there isn't a film of his I've ever watched not enjoyed elements of it. You know, I don't think he's made a bad film as such, but Seven back in 95, The Game in 97, Fight Club 99, and then Panic Room 2002, a little bit less so, Zodiac, Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Social Network, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. He's obviously involved in House of Cards quite heavily, in the direction and the kind of, you know, getting that off the ground, and Gone Girl, and then most recently is a TV project, Mindhunter, which is incredible. And also, just a side note, we are going to be doing an On the Box on Mindhunter next week with Gags, so that'll be a lot of fun. Those films, to me, I mean, it's one list after another with just knockout hits, really. What we're going to do this evening is kind of talk about our favourites, and it's quite hard to do, especially for me, to nominate one film and just stick with that. If we decide to get into a lot of discussion, then we might end up making this a double header, and we'll see where we go with it. I've got Tarantino lined up at some stage, and that's going to be ridiculously long. So it's hard when you talk about these kind of films, because there's a lot to talk about. I'll kick off with you, Luke. You've debated long and hard about your favourite film. What is it you've actually decided upon?
Yeah, so I was talking to you earlier, wasn't I, about what I was going to choose. And it was initially, straight off the bat, it was Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. But I, thinking about it, I've actually changed my opinion, I think, and I've gone for The Social Network. The reason I chose it was actually because when I first heard, I think without knowing too much about it, when it first came out, it was 2000, I don't remember, was it 2011, maybe a little earlier. I just heard of it, and I think maybe it was like an Empire tweet or something that was basically the Facebook movie, which sounds like a fucking nightmare to me. Like, you hear of like the emoji movie, the Facebook movie.
Imagine the state of a Twitter movie, honestly. What would that be?
It would be carnage.
That'd be carnage. Yeah, it would be carnage.
So essentially, that's what I thought it was. It was just like various like racist family members, but no, it turned out to be pretty good. So yeah, I chose that, and that's kind of the reason. So I went into it very, very negative. In fact, so much so that I was kind of like, you know what, I don't think I'm gonna watch this film. And then you kind of hear Fincher's attached to it, and then you either think it's gonna be excellent or he's dropped an absolute clanger. But to be honest with you, he kind of doesn't really drop clangers, does he? General.
I think he's fairly safe pair of hands. You know, even the films, like I said before, even the films that aren't quite up to the really high standard, I can see why he's made them. He doesn't do anything, you know, he doesn't need the work, it doesn't feel like. He does the productions and picks the script that he really wants to make, and he's quite choosing, quite picky about things, and you can tell. I mean, I watched this like the day or even a week before it came out on some kind of secret screening thing, and I'd known about it. There was quite a bit of hype around it. I'd liked Jesse Eisenberg at that time, so I was kind of following his career because he'd done Zombieland and Adventureland quite recently before that, and I really liked him, and I knew Aaron Sorkin was doing the script, who famously did The West Wing. script. So I thought, good script, great director. It's going to be quite interesting. And for me, the reason I was quite excited, because although Facebook is what it is, I knew it was about the slightly controversial elements about how it was set up. And
yeah.
And I kind of thought that might be quite interesting, and actually turned out, I think it's incredible. I think it's quite a pioneering film because it's related to modern society. And I think there's not many films, although it's not directly about adding friends and all that jazz, but it is about how one person could have made such an incredible difference to the kind of social element and world we live in, really. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, I don't know if Facebook existed, maybe something else would, but I think the whole thing around Mark Zuckerberg was making it perfect. You know what I mean? It never crashed. You know what I mean? It was meticulous, you know?
Yeah.
And it was ruthless, which excited me. Just coming back to you, Luke. So when you watched it, what was your kind of initial reaction?
When I first watched the film, as I said, I was quite unsure about it. But I think it's the first scene that hits you straight off the bat. I think it's quite quick, the interchange between Eisenberg's character, obviously Mark Zuckerberg, and his partner. Yeah. And you kind of get a vibe where you get a feel for Zuckerberg's character, and you think this guy is a bit of an arse. But then as you go into the film, I think that's basically what they're trying to get across initially. But as you go into the film, you find out that it's a little more complicated than that. And I think the root of his problems is probably like an insecurity, which you find out kind of up until like the very end scene, essentially. And I just thought it was so slick. I thought the whole, from the production to just absolutely everything to do with it, felt very modern in a way that Facebook is, like you say, for like a modern society. But I loved it.
First scene, you're right. It's kind of it's the game setter, and it's also the kind of game changer, really, in the whole dynamic. Because the whole dynamic of that film centers around the start and the beginning, where he ultimately requests her as a friend on Facebook. He's one of the richest men in the world, and he's there sweating over whether this girl have forgiven him for being a dickhead at the beginning of the film. So, you know, it is about that. You're right. It's his social insecurity as much as anything else. But that whole evening scene. So, have you both been to uni? I don't know if it means you have to have been. But you know when you first kind of, you have those like two might do it now, but I've got kids and I need to sleep occasionally. But you have those kind of wild nights and you just kind of buzzing and you're up all night and you know, for him and for a kind of Harvard dorm room, it's him blogging and simultaneously doing an algorithm and producing a format for what is hot or not. Is that what he does? I think so. He compares all the uni.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's called Face Match.
And I mean that, and he basically takes down the whole town's network, doesn't he? Which is insane. And he obviously gets suspended from university. And he's almost at a point where he doesn't care. And it's kind of crazy because he must know he's that intelligent. He must know what he's doing. And then obviously he basically rips off Army Hammer, and one of the best CGI moments in modern times, if you ask me, which is Army Hammer's twin brother being just him. The old Winklevi. I don't know if you both know that. It's just one guy.
Yeah.
And they've just,
I found that out and I was very shocked.
Yeah, well, for me, I was as well, because it's just subtle. Do you know what I mean? You know, you believe that they're two different people, and it's almost seamless to the point you wouldn't know. Do you know what I mean? And their relationship and the kind of developments on those characters and the fact that he's basically juggling two lawsuits at one stage or another. I think everyone in this is incredible, including, which shocks me to say this, Justin Timberlake, who plays the kind of... Was he the Napster boss? I think he
Sean Parker, and
obviously he was the one that kind of definitively came up with dropping the
I'm from the Facebook, which kind of had quite an instrumental impact, and then kind of turning him against, you know, Eduardo, which I kind of thought was kind of the pivotal part. Simon, what were your kind of feelings on it?
Yeah, I liked it as well. I saw it when it was first set, and I haven't re-watched it, but I found it. It's kind of weird. Like, I found that as I kind of looked back on it, I read a few little bits, and I pretty much remembered the whole film now after just going, oh yeah, that's it. And I loved the way it was kind of, I liked how it was filmed where they were doing the law case and then they kind of bounced back a little bit and they told the whole thing. So you kind of feel the tension between Mark and Eduardo, and then it bounces back, and it just, I just love the way he tells it that way, as opposed to just having it open up with them being best friends and then they kind of, you know, have this falling out. And just to talk a little bit, I don't want to get too much into the whole technical end of it, but I was having a look back earlier at a few bits of the film, and you were talking about when Sean Parker kind of comes in and he breaks up the friendship. It's a thing that I've seen in most of David Fincher's films where he'll put Eduardo, say, and Mark in the same shot all the time, and then when Sean Parker enters, they're never in the same shot anymore. So it's like he builds his films around, he kind of maps it out that he puts people with certain people to almost trick your mind into thinking, okay, he's now friends with him, and he doesn't ever really kind of interact with him anymore. And it's just, he's just absolutely fantastic. His editing and how it's filmed is unbelievable.
It's just, and to be honest, man, it feels like a documentary almost. And I know that sounds, you know, I know it's a film, but the way he produces things, and I don't know, and I know I'm going to talk about it next week, but if you watch Mindhunter, it honestly has that same kind of vibe to it. And his style in and Zodiac as well is almost the same. You do feel you feel so connected with the characters. It just feels like it's play for play exactly what happened. And I'm pretty sure Zuckerberg will deny a lot of the story because it doesn't paint him in a good light. Not that he really cares, because he's one of the richest men of all time. But ultimately, maybe he does care. You know, that's what it's trying to get across. Yeah. That everyone kind of wants to be popular, and as much as they don't always want to be in the popularity contest, you know, they still care. And Eduardo kind of is the guy you're rooting for, and Zuckerberg isn't. But I think it spins it on its head a little bit, because you kind of start to appreciate Mark's genius, and then it changes your perspective. I mean, we talked about the script. I mean, the script is insanely good. I mean, I'm not Swing fan, because I haven't really had the time to sit through 9 series or whatever it is. But I know the famous elements of it, and I know bits and pieces. But I think most people, one way or another, have heard of Aaron Sorkin. And if you look at just some of the quotes on it, and you're talking about the kind of legal battles before, when Mark is completely dismissing the lawyer on and on and on, he's just... It's incredible. Like, it, honestly, at times I was just staggered by it, because it's words that build so much tension in a film, which, although the stakes are quite high, it's not, there's no violence. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's no life or death kind of situation. It's just about money, really, and about, I don't know, you know, ultimately it's about a friendship story, but. You know, it's crazy that the script can leave you that tense at times over what isn't a life or threat kind of life or death kind of situation. So yeah, that's what got me. I mean, Luke, anything else real standout for you in the film as such?
I think what you mentioned there about the tension, and I think it's definitely worth kind of pointing out the fact that I think in a film it's often kind of easy to get tension across when you're kind of being almost like violent or kind of being angry and aggressive, and there's very few times that any of the characters or actors actually do that. And I think the fact that we all noticed that it was tense is a testament to like all the performances in the film, really, because it's quite a subtle anger, and you can get across that everyone. It's almost like a bit of a triangle, isn't it, between
it's almost
three
passive
parties.
Aggressive as well.
Yeah, and I think it's really, really important that, and that's why, I mean, like you said about Eisenberg earlier, there are people who, you know, don't take to him too much, but he has got it in his locker to play a really serious role well. And I think just one like little final point, which I did want to make. So I knew in the back of my mind, but didn't consciously realise that Fincher was attached in some way to House of Cards. But actually what made me look back earlier today and kind of have a little Google was, I think when you watch The Social Network, you can see by the camera shots and almost the quality of the shots, it's very, very House of Cards, I feel. Or should I say House of Cards is very The Social Network, and that's kind of his style. It's very crisp, very fresh, almost like minimalist. And you just like lets the kind of guys on screen do the talking and stuff. But I think you can literally tell that it is kind of the same. Because I mean, I think he's an executive producer in House of Cards, and you can very much tell that he's has like his fingerprints all over that production.
It's his.
He directed a few episodes, right?
He directed a couple, but I think it's his baby in terms of the whole way it's shot and done. And I think if you watch Mindhunter again, it's that similar vein where he's kind of letting the characters and tell the story without. I think Mindhunter is less words and more kind of, I don't know, more subtlety again, even, which is almost incredible. But you're right in this. I mean, the only moments of kind of raised tension are through Eduardo. And the big one in particular is when he goes to, you know, the head office of Facebook and smashes the laptop on the desk. Because, you know, the whole thing through the film was, you know, he's zoned in, he's wired in or whatever, don't interrupt him because you're the programmers and just, you know, whereas he at that point knows he's getting absolutely screwed over and his shares have been watered down to nothing and his name's pretty much not involved, despite him initially putting up the algorithm, which is key, and putting forward the money. And the one that maybe, you know, was a young guy, wasn't going around growing the brand or growing the kind of Facebook as it was meant to be done, but was still having that impact, you know what I mean? And still pivotal to the founding of it. So that scene when he smashes the keyboard and threatens to punch Sean and that kind of, that all that tension from there was incredible because it all built up to that. And I think a lot of it in Fincher's work, and we'll probably talk about it with the other films, is the score as well as anything else. You know, I know we're going to talk about Fight Club and Seven and various others, but I think the score and the deeper kind of undercurrent in this, there's occasional moments where it's just all about that backing that just builds you up, and you don't always need words, you know. I know it's a film with a lot of words, but his scores on every film would just really build that tension. I think it's magnificent, to be honest. I think for modern depiction of the way things are, you know, we're all avid social media users, and I know Facebook is now for the grandparents and parents of the world, maybe from when I was quite young at uni starting out, you know, Facebook had just been introduced, you know, what, I don't know, 12 years ago, 13 years ago. And so the buzz was there when I was at uni, and what's all this? And it's not shit MySpace where you had to program your own homepage. And, you know what I mean? It was a usable interface, and it was exciting. It was different. The other ones just kind of left by the wayside. So I think it's nice that a film has got higher stakes than that, and it's about the kind of financial and the, you know, other elements of it. But I think it's still a film about Facebook and modern society. You know, those kind of films need to be made. You know, I'm big on, you know, I've talked about them before with the modern sci-fis, but like films like Her, which is all about the kind of, I don't know, all the kind of the real modern, you know, sci-fi elements, Ex Machina and those kind of films where you kind of feel like they might happen in the not so distant future, you know, whereas this film was really about what was happening, you know. So I think it's great. Anything from you, Simon? Sorry, man, I'm chatting like crazy.
No, you're fine. No, I think it's I pretty much agree with all that. I just think it's kind of, I think for people like us, I think people who are like in their kind of mid to late 30s, I think a film like this would be, it's kind of nice for this film to be made, because as you kind of mentioned, we're pretty all in our, we're all like about 19-ish when the Facebook was kind of first about, like I remember being banded about. So I think it's very interesting just to see how the film, or how Facebook kind of came to be. And I think just the film used that quite well, but obviously that was just the basics of it. I mean, it's pretty much all about, you know, money, basically picking between vast amount of money and relationships, you know, whether it's with your best, even if it's with your best friend or your girlfriend or friend of yours, it's just basically he's picked that, and you can kind of see that he's not too happy about it, but at the end of the day, I think if he was to make that pick, he'd probably make that, you know, I think that's what he'd pick each time. But I think Eduardo wouldn't pick that, you know, so it's interesting.
Yeah, I think Eduardo would say he wouldn't have betrayed or backstabbed his friend under any circumstances. Exactly, you know what I mean? And I think Mark did get led astray, and I think everyone kind of accepts that he made a poor decision, and I think he accepts that ultimately, because when they're in that room and they're kind of trying to have a free speech, but there's lawyers left, right and center, you know, he knows he's hurt his friend. Do you know what I mean? And you can feel that.
You can tell,
And there's humor in there as well. You know, the stuff about the chicken is hilarious. you know, where he's saying he's been a cannibal to feeding his chicken, and that article came out in the local newspaper. And there's elements there that, you know, you just think, Christ, that is like uni. Do you know what I mean? I know it's a higher level of intellect than the uni I went to, let's put it that way. But, you know, ultimately, it's just students being students, but they're just super smart ones. And they're having you know, the lesson, or the kind of, you know, Bill Gates speech at one point where he's in the room, you know, and that's crazy to think that he had that speech from Bill Gates and ultimately becomes almost as successful, or if not more so. Or not more so, Microsoft is monstrous. But you know what I mean? It's crazy because it's a different world, and a lot of films have been made before about Harvard and MIT and those kind of institutes in the States, but not with such kind of ramifications, really. So I think it's great. Like we said, it really is a big take on modern society, as well as having incredible acting and performances from everyone. Yeah. And like I said, the way it's shot, man, you don't even get away from that. It doesn't feel
unbelievable.
You just feel like you're in a room, you know. Yeah. He's just such a way of producing things that don't. Do you know how hard it is to produce that? It looks like it is seamless and easy, but
it's beautiful.
It makes it look easy. He doesn't. Yeah, like it's kind of like it's filmed. Like it almost feels like you don't pay attention to how it's filmed, the fact that it's filmed so well that you don't think about it, but if you actually spend the time and analyze all of his technique, it makes you look at the real world like you're living in a David Fincher film, because it's just the way he tracks people and how
he tracks people as
they walk, it moves at their speed, and when they look up, it kind of angles with them, so it makes you feel attached to the person, and you feel like you're there with them, but you don't think about that until you actually think about it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you put it better than I did. You do feel like you're in the third person kind of view of the events unfolding in front of you. Do you know what I mean? Whereas films often, it depends on the way they're shot. Do you know what I mean? You look at like a La La Land, for instance, and like it or loathe it. That or the major scenes in that are shot in one take, which is astounding, you know. I don't know if Whiplash was the same, but I know La La Land, for instance, the scene at the beginning and some of the major scenes are all shot in one go and rehearsed to that point and shot.
Yeah.
So you only get that, you get that very much Hollywood on screen, old
school kind of get the
viewpoint of things. Whereas this, you would get a lot of shots, you know, where you feel like you're just behind the conversation. Do you know what I mean? You're just in that party next to it.
And yeah, that's hard to do. And we're going to talk about other films. And I mean, all of his films are shot slightly different, but there's obviously very big similarities. But they all had that kind of incredible way of taking you on the story with them, rather than, I don't ever think you get left behind in a Fincher film, if that makes sense. I don't feel like there's lulls. It's so well cut that you just don't feel like you're ever not involved in the story, you know? That was cool. We might run on a bit, but we'll get to Simon's choice and then we'll see how we're going to go, because there's three films we're going to talk about, but I don't know, there's one film I don't feel like we can miss off and not talk about, so we'll have to decide. If not, there's more, but you know what it's like with these things. So, Simon, hit me with your favourite film or choice for this evening.
Zodiac, although it was very hard to pick between that and Fight Club for me. I kind of went with Zodiac, probably because it's the one that I saw the most recently, and I just think it's just a very interesting film to kind of talk about. It's just such a, it's quite different from any of his other films, but it's a topic that most people would at least know a little bit about, even if they've never watched the film. It's kind of a fairly, you know, it's probably one of the most,
I think a lot of people have heard of the Zodiac killer.
You know?
He's quite, I think there's a lot of films that have come in the kind of serial killer guise in more recent times. And I think most people, I think, have heard of the Zodiac Killer without maybe knowing that much about it.
Yeah. So like the thing about the film that's good is it's based on the book that's written by Robert Graysmith, who is played by Jake Gyllenhaal in the film. So it's based on true events, but it's kind of from his own opinion. So there is a little bit of bias from the book that definitely you feel in the film, but mostly it's based on events that did really happen, but from his point of view. So it's so that's kind of, you know, it's definitely interesting from that perspective as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a clever film because it, serial killer films, and this is quite a slow burner, you know, I must have to say, because I watched this the first time and it absolutely hooked me. But I remember I watched it again a few times, but unless you're giving it your full attention, I don't think you get the full rewards from it. It's that kind of film that really does require your full attention. And I know it's easy to say, but we just talked about Facebook before and social media, and everyone's on their phones like me far too often now. And it's quite, unless you're in a cinema, I don't think you're always giving something your full and utmost attention. So I, it's one of those films, the first time I watched it, I literally couldn't take my eyes off it for the whole 2 hours, 45 minutes, running time, whatever it is. And it's such a tense film. I mean, it's got an incredible cast because, you know, at the time, so 2007, Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, Jake Gyllenhaal, Brian Cox is in it as well. And it's obviously...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A kind of film that doesn't... it doesn't rely on big personalities. You know, you've got these kind of big actors in there. So Downey Jr. with a kind of cocksure kind of performance, but stripped down, you know, and I think people, I don't know, people don't differentiate between, you know, Robert Downey and Tony Stark these days, to be honest. But it's hard to do. He's done how many, you know, Marvel films. But the guy can do a lot of different performances, and not just the kind of random comedy ones that he does put in now and again on certain films. He's incredible in this film, and him and Jake Gyllenhaal's kind of interplay is exceptional, and then Ruffalo kind of leads into that, and the three of them together, whenever they're kind of interacting, just kind of incredible for me. Simon, I don't know, anything to comment on the specific actors' performances, or are we getting story?
Yeah, I think like as you mentioned, them three kind of would be the biggest names. I feel like they were all just kind of hitting their peak about that time as well. Gyllenhaal just really, because he's basically playing he's like a cartoonist who's working in the newspaper company. Is it the San Francisco Chronicle? Is it?
I think it is. Yeah,
it's, or maybe awesome, it's what it was before that. Yeah. And so a letter comes in, basically it's, and no one knows what it's about. It's kind of like a puzzle that's done by the killer. I don't think they've named it, but that point. And anyway, he kind of takes it upon himself to try and get involved. But he's basically just like me and you. He is he's just a normal.
No, he's not a detective. Becomes, he's not got any background.
You know, so
in it,
he's,
you know,
no.
I mean?
And he just becomes absolutely hooked on this thing. And he is, I think, to me, the biggest theme of the film and the biggest drive is he's just obsessed with figuring out who the Zodiac is.
And I think it's
becomes to the, you know, it becomes to the point where he loses his wife, he loses the relationship with his kid, and he's just basically spends his entire time living in the past, asking like everyone and trying to go back over film cases. And there's bits in his apartment where the wall is just filled with, you know, like all his different timelines and notes and stuff. And it just becomes to the point, if that point, careful. And they don't even know if it was the same person, because he kind of comes back then and he murders more people, but they don't even, you know, it's just, and he's just completely just goes mad. And I think just the fact that he's just a normal man and he's doing his best to try and convince people to just give him a little bit more info, to the point where he rings up, what's the name of Mark Ruffalo? Can't remember the name of his character, but he, you know, like he rings him at like 4 in the morning and wakes him up and stuff, and he's pops over to his house and annoys his wife and stuff, you know, and he just gets, but
it's the other two can kind of detach themselves from it, do you know what I mean?
They kind of Down
Jr.
is
interested, but equally he's not that arsed in the same regard, you know. And as much as Ruffalo's character does want to catch him, there's no way he's going to go to the lengths that Gyllenhaal does. I think you're right.
Yeah.
For me, Gyllenhaal was kind of coming into his own at this point. So we'd come off the back of Rendition and Jarhead. And then you look at some of his more recent performances, Nightcrawler and Prisoners and stuff along those lines. You kind of see where the influence came from. You know,
yeah, definitely.
You can feel a little bit of, actually, that's the point where maybe you realize you didn't want to just be, you know, your archetypal good-looking lead. Do you know what I mean? Because he's done films like that, don't get me wrong. And he did Prince of Persia, which, God, I can't forget.
Jesus, forgot about that.
My terrible,
oh, my God. Yeah.
And you know, he's done films like that, don't get me wrong. But equally, he does, you know, Nightcrawler in particular, just crazy, crazy kind of roles where he's pushing himself now. And you kind of feel like it started at this point, if you look at his career path, to be honest. And
I think it feels
like the role got into his mind as much as the character, you know. It did feel like you can see why, do you know what I mean? You really can. I mean, this film's tense. Look, you see a lot of quite harrowing elements, And you know, obviously you see a lot of what the murderer is ultimately doing. But the scene for me, and this is the kind of scene stealing scene, is the basement scene with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I was going to say that actually. Yeah, geez, I have that one marked down as probably
I don't
my
really
favorite
watch
ever Fincher
films.
Scenes.
I don't really watch horror films. It's not my genre as such. But that scene is probably the scariest, you know, most memorable scene for me in any kind of thriller, where I was literally on the verge of shitting my kegs, you know. do you remember that scene, Luke? Have you watched this film recently, or has it been a while?
I haven't watched it recently, but I have seen it a few times. I think, just like touching on what you said earlier, I think when I first watched it, I think I bought it, so I was going through a very big buying DVDs phase, and it looked awesome. Oh, yes. I mean, yeah, that phase hasn't stopped yet, but that was just the beginning of it. And I just thought, oh yeah, I like my thrillers, so I thought I'd pick that up. And because it's quite long, which like a lot of Fincher films are, but this is like particularly long, really, isn't it? It's like nearly 3 hours long. And the first time I watched it, I kind of wasn't too enamored by it, but kind of it was one of them. I'd bought it, so you know, a couple of months later, I rewatched it, and from then I did really, really like it. I think it is like you say, it's very tense, including like the run up to the end and like the almost the end scene.
Psychological thriller, really, but yeah. It's about the effects of the kind of, you know, of the chase, really, of trying to catch that guy. But when he kind of knows he has him, but he can't prove it. It's almost the most frustrating.
That's the thing, element, yeah. Like, you know? I think in the book, I think he's convinced it's that guy, Arthur Lee. But yes. There's all things with mismatched handwriting and stuff like that you can't really prove. And he was trying to convince the handwriting expert to kind of go back over it. And he asked him if maybe he had written it with his bad hand or not, you know. And it's just all these little tiny things.
Really,
that got
it's the tiny intricacies where
it
was predating, you know, the proper kind of DNA elements of things nowadays and evidence.
It's just coming into play, wasn't it? Yeah.
Exactly.
Like
and
60s.
And, yeah, it's late 60s into 70s. And that is what the element of it is. It's why the story is so notorious, because obviously he's doing things which were horrible, but he's enjoying the chase. Do you know what I mean? And he's sending these puzzles and the kind of, you know,
he's definitely feel like
magazines cut out.
That's
and,
his
know,
thing,
letters.
Isn't it?
It's his thing, and he wants to be caught almost. And it's that kind of, it's a slow burning chase. Don't get me wrong. It's a very slow chase, but
and there's no ending. There's no actual.
Yeah, and
no
people will hate
payoff,
it for that.
Which is
people will hate it for that. Yeah. You know, people that have watched Seven and Fight Club and those kind of films of Fincher will go, where's my ending? But not just the people that are directly affected, it's the ones that. So I need to watch it again because it's been far too long, to be honest. I need to set aside a good evening and really enjoy it. But I loved it from the first time I've seen it, and every time since. I think it's just an absolutely fantastic film. And I think it's up there with his finest, because it's bold filmmaking. You know, it's not a story that I think other directors would choose to take on. Not all of them have the mindset of David Fincher, let's be fair. But it's, you know, I think it's a good story that needed to be told. And it's the kind of thing that now maybe you'd see it as a kind of a 3 or 4-parter on a,
like,
you know, TV thing, you
know,
where
you don't,
you know, that I think it's gone that way where these kind of things get made, but without the script and the story. So you get, Broadchurch is actually really good, and there is The Fall and those kind of things that BBC do, and they're all done quite well. And obviously the Netflix documentaries and Netflix styles dramas and stuff are coming in that direction. But yeah, these films don't get really made anymore, not like this, I don't think. And I think it's Fincher using his influence and using his pedigree, and you know, and that's what good directors do. They make the stories they want to make and tell the stories they want to tell. So good choice, man. Good choice.
There's a lot more to speak about it, but I think we could end up getting way too much into
it's one
it.
Of those
so
films,
I think that's a good
right?
yeah
it's
one of those films
honestly
you can just talk
it's one
and
of
talk
those films
it.
You could talk about it for weeks if you really wanted to. It's almost something you could have. Well, I think there are podcasts on it which I don't listen to, you know, the kind of true crime podcasts. I think I should get into those because there's some really interesting ones, apparently.
There's a lot.
There are people that know a lot more about this stuff and all about psychological profiling and all the FBI stuff. And yeah, it's one of those films I know we could talk and talk and talk about, but sadly we don't have that much time to do it.
I just want to mention one more small thing.
Go.
Just that fits in with what we were talking about there, how I think if that film was made by anybody else, they'd have probably added in a big kind of action bit at the end of the film. And if you remember in this film, they go and see Dirty Harry, which is broadly based on that idea where they base the bad person. It's not actually mentioned in the film, but I think he's kind of roughly based on the Zodiac. That film has that big action thing. I just thought that was a kind of a little interesting play that he kind of did to kind of go, here's the film that most people would expect, but that's not going to happen in my film kind of thing. You know, I thought it was a nice little kind of a fuck you to the kind of over the top Hollywood big style action ending that you'd probably expect if you had just read what the film is about. You'd think, oh, action and murder and all these things. So yeah, I like that.
Yeah, no, I'm with
you. He's
a brave director. You're right. He doesn't do things that maybe the conventional demand of him. Do you know what I mean? It's you know, in certain films, like Seven, you kind of it's a hell of a twist. But you kind of know what you're expecting, at least you know through the film. It's not predictable in any sense, but it's telling you what it's going to tell you. Do you know what I mean? It's giving you it on a plate. Whereas, and I think, you know, Gone Girl more recently, Jesus Christ, that threw me complete sideways. I mean, I know people read the book and it's a great book apparently, but it's a hell of a story to tell. And I didn't know what to expect watching it. I could watch that film again and it would make me feel as awkward and tense as it did nearly throughout the whole bloody film. Do you know what I mean? And you know, that's him for you. He's telling stories that add that level of tension, but then magnify it by about 100, really. It's quite remarkable, to be honest. Go for it.
Oh, no, yeah. I just thought, just while we were ending on Zodiac, I thought just something I kind of noticed earlier, I think, and it kind of goes back to, it kind of starts with Zodiac almost and goes back to the whole idea of what, like, brand Fincher is in terms of films. And I feel like Zodiac kind of starts that off. It's almost like you've got pre-Zodiac, where you've got kind of the grittier films, like you say, what you might say is maybe not less tense, but a bit different. Yeah. And then Zodiac kind of starts the almost what we were talking about before, where it's more subtle. It's kind of, you know, like with Gone Girl and like almost like with Social Network, I think the people kind of do the talking almost. And I think I just feel like it's, if you look back, so I'm just looking now, there's kind of Gone Girl, Social Network, Zodiac and Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. And I kind of almost, I kind of feel like they almost feel not like a quad as like a run of films, but they feel very stylistically similar almost. And it's almost like you've got two halves of his career almost. Because I think now you can kind of tell what a Fincher film is. I think, especially with me saying between House of Cards and Social Network, I think you can kind of get the little feel. And that's what's probably most exciting going forward for like David Fincher films, I imagine. And that's kind of something I wanted to point out.
Any project, mate, any project gets me excited.
It's a banker, isn't it? Yeah, definitely. And I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah. No. You spot on, mate. He definitely.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely has a style. He's definitely kind of evolved as a director, as they all do.
Absolutely.
They all pick up different projects and all occasionally throw you a kind of curveball that surprises you. There was a really good element on the Empire podcast recently that I listened to where they were talking about directors doing films completely out of turn, and they joked about David Fincher doing a romantic comedy.
I would watch that. I would go back and back, you know,
a serial killer falling in love with I don't know who, but it would just be quite hilarious.
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, and then we talk about
what else? There were some great ones in there that were really funny, talking about kind of big action directors.
That sounds like an interesting thing, actually, yeah.
Doing, like, animation and, you know, just things that are completely otherworldly to what they do.
Michael Bay doing a Pixar film, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. yeah, you can't see it, can you? So, no, that made me laugh a lot because I think everyone knows Fincher is in love with the darker elements of stories. But occasionally, he does do things that do surprise. I think Curious Case of Benjamin Button, again, a film I think we talked about briefly before that Luke, you were surprised he did actually, which
very
again,
yeah.
So was I. Yeah,
yeah. I that's a good point in terms of like directors throwing curveballs because I don't know whether it was maybe kind of from the trailer and you kind of just don't. I never ever. It's never something that had attracted me, and I would have never put Fincher with it, and have saying like brand Fincher, I suppose it kind of almost makes you actually want to watch it a bit because I think he doesn't really drop clangers and you can have like, you know, your own like difference of opinion on certain films, but I think it's always good to see what he's produced because there will always be something in there that's quality, whether it be the direction, whether it kind of be the performances again of Brad Pitt. And I probably will now like watch that after finding out earlier today.
I think for me, Kate Blanchett's performance in that is really spectacular. And
is it really? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember that film that well, but she is always incredible. And Tilda Swinton's in it, and I'm always a big kind of firm believer that anything with Tilda Swinton's always better. and yeah, you're right. It's all about Brad Pitt, but I think Blanchett's the performance that takes the eye a bit because she's the one that doesn't age in reverse. She doesn't get that attention, but her character is the one that has to go through the kind of different journey. So I need to rewatch it. It did surprise me that it was Fincher. But again, I've probably grown up a little bit as a film watcher in the last 10 years because I think 10 years ago, I probably would have dismissed it as being, you know, that's not my kind of film. Do you know what I mean? Or, you know,
I definitely did do that.
and I think, obviously, IMDb has been around a long time, but I've always been interested in different directors. And I think you could ask anyone, you know, what Spielberg directed, and they'll tell you Jurassic Park or E.T. or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And same with Scorsese. But I think people's understanding of the way films are produced and by who and the cinematographers and stuff that, you know, people are, you know, maybe older than me and it's just come with age a little bit, you know, will have known about all this kind of stuff. But now with more access and instant access to it, and then you get articles by Googling someone's name, you get more information. I think that's where the internet's really allowed more people to kind of aspire to learn a bit more about films and make it a bit more interesting as far as I'm concerned, because I think it's great that you can just go and it's giving people who maybe didn't get much credit previously now get credit. I'm sure if, you know, and I'm not sure about casting directors, they probably do, but most people in the industry must go on IMDb and see what someone's done rather than just look at their CV these days and say, oh yeah, they're interested in that, or I've seen this, or they
I mean, that is, or, you know, that is the CV, I suppose, isn't it, almost, in a way, like we have got access to all their CV and we can go back and just kind of pick at it, and that's what's probably so good about especially IMDb. I mean, I wouldn't have known. Like, I kind of will watch a film, and I think you automatically just go on your phone and go, "Oh, I wonder what he's done." And then you'll see things you've seen, and you'll see things you haven't seen. And I think that's what's really like really awesome about that as a function, especially.
I put a tweet out yesterday about music and stuff in films and TV, where you watch something and you go, "Fuck, this is great!" And you either, you know, go on the app that listens to the track and tells you what it is, or you Google the lyrics and you find it in seconds, and then you listen to it, and it's like, man, that's great. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know a lot of people aren't always about modern tech and all the rest, but I am, because you can just get instant access to stuff that triggers. Do you know what I mean? You go and watch a film, and we talked about it. We talked about Baby Driver. The soundtrack's incredible on that. And I think I downloaded it the day I watched the film because I was like, well, I like Edgar Wright's music too. He's obviously got great taste in all of his films. And I'm a massive Scott Pilgrim fan and all the kind of stuff around that. But you just go and go, oh, that track was ace, what was it? Oh, you found it within microseconds. Do you know what I mean? It connects you to films in a different way than it did previously, because, you know, and a lot of people stream, and that's well known now, and obviously Netflix, and I think I'll talk about all that at some point in the future.
But now everything's kind of instant access, and people will watch films, and then maybe they'll go to cinema, maybe they won't. And there's more access to information, and now trailers are a huge thing, whereas, I don't know, they were always big, but not to the same degree, and social media's changed the perception of it. So I think Fincher films in particular, they don't fall on the bandwagon of hype, and they don't fall in that conventional buzz kind of section. And I think when I used to watch them, I used to kind of feel like an individual, whereas I know they probably grossed hundreds of millions of times at the box office, but I think they're different films to mm-hmm. that kind of buzz film that you get nowadays. And that's kind of why I like them, because I don't know, you don't always want to go to cinema and watch something in 3D at the IMAX. I mean, occasionally you do, don't get me wrong, but you often want the story to tell itself, and I think that's
what you do.
Does, you know, and so that's what interests me most. But I think what we're going to do, because I talk a lot, clearly, is kind of split this into two parts, so it's kind of bite-sized and people don't have to listen for 90-plus minutes and stuff. So we'll cut it off here and then come back and release part two, which we're going to talk about shortly, and give my choice. And then I think, because my choice isn't Seven, I think we need to discuss Seven, because I think it's almost a travesty and stuff not to. And then I got a few nice, kind Twitter questions and people asking a few bits and pieces, which I wanted to cover because, you know, people made the effort to ask those kind of questions. So we'll do that. Really appreciate everyone listening. I'm sure everyone will agree that two guys made really good choices. And if you haven't really watched a lot of Fincher's work, do before listening to this podcast, because there's a shit ton of spoilers. But B, you know, I really think you should, because he defines the kind of thriller genre like nobody else. And whenever I always recommended films to people, it was pretty much go-to with Fincher. And then after that, it was probably someone connected with Fincher, because if it's that genre, because he's inspired a lot of people, and you can tell when you watch films nowadays like Nightcrawler and Prisoners and, you know, the stuff by Villeneuve, that, you know, there is that kind of there that was inspired from a director doing it 10, 15, 20 years earlier. So cool. Right, we'll be back for part two. I hope you join us then. Appreciate listening.
Stop.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.